most of the chains and customers that I've talked to that have decided to get into the delivery space have actually found that it's less expensive to get the insurance and use your own employees, even hire a couple of kids to drive the food around. That way you're protecting the brand and the experience from when the food is put into a to-go container to when it actually arrives at the customer's house. It is the 9th of July. The year is 2020. It's 5 o'clock. There's my timestamp. I want to jump right in. I want to talk about a couple of things today that were in the news. This whole episode is mostly going to be things that happened this week, things that I'm thinking about. We're going to cover a big acquisition, something about the supply chain, and a little bit about gloves, of all things. Can you find gloves? Do you have enough gloves? Do you know where to look? You'll find out. Hang in there, like 10 minutes, and we'll get there. All right. I'm going to do something a little bit different for today's episode. I'm going to read the note from my sponsor right now, and then we're going to dive right in so I don't have to interrupt in a rude way in the middle of an episode like I always do. Leave a little cliffhanger, jump into the advertisement. Not going to do that. So here we go. 1 minute in. Ready? Go. Uber acquires Postmates. That's a pretty big deal. Uber Eats acquires Postmates for $2.65 billion in an all-stock deal. Surprisingly, though, they're still not even the largest shareholder in the third-party food delivery space. All right, so DoorDash still has that. I think they came in at over 40%. They're at about 44% of market share. And after this acquisition of Postmates, Uber Eats is sitting at about 37%. So think about that, $2.65 billion for about 8% market share gain. That still puts you in position number two. So why did this happen? What was the thinking behind why Uber Eats acquired a much smaller player than, say, a Grubhub, who would have put them in the number one position? Two reasons, I think. So one, they were trying to avoid some regulatory scrutiny. They knew that they could get this deal through much, much quicker if they were acquiring a smaller portion or a smaller piece of the market share, and they weren't getting put into just catapulted into the number one spot. So not to politicize anything, but in an election year with the current administration, things are kind of getting pushed through quickly. People aren't scrutinizing it as much as they would. So Uber Eats thought this is a excellent opportunity just to purchase somebody else in the game, move on with it, do it quickly, no scrutiny, no regulatory oversight, or not a lot of oversight, I should say, and call it a day. And they did it, and happened pretty quickly, actually. So number two, the second reason that I'm thinking about, when Uber came out with their Q2 earnings report, it showed that their ride share was down about 80% year over year. So that was just looking at April 2019 versus April 2020. So they were about 80% down year over year, but their Eats segment was up 50% year over year, right? So through these lockdowns and dining rooms being closed and people doing a lot, utilizing the delivery services, the third-party services, a lot more than normal, that's pretty substantial for any segment of any business to be up 50%. But more importantly, the other higher revenue aspect of their business or their company was the ride shares. So to have that down 80% with another segment up 50%, it's kind of like momentum investing. They just wanted to jump into that and put as much time, money, energy into the segment that was on the upswing while the getting's good. So that's my thought. Haven't confirmed that with the company, but those are two reasons that really stick out as why people normally, or why plays like this have panned out in historically. All right, so something else to kind of note here is that the ride share industry, as well as the third-party delivery industry, are not very profitable. No companies in any of those segments have actually turned a significant profit. Most have not turned any sort of profit. Even though the revenue's high, the overhead is much more expensive. So, or outweighs the profitability. So what we are seeing is this is actually sending a very odd signal to startups and to other companies that maybe want to enter either of these spaces, that say you were the creator of or the founder, the team that founded Postmates, and you were not profitable, but growing a business, stealing market share from some of the bigger players, from the Grubhubs and the DoorDash and the Ubers, and you did not need to become profitable. You just needed to scale and take enough market share in order to get acquired. And you exit, your investors are happy, you're happy, and you can go on to another industry. I personally think that that's not a great message to be sending to the markets or to other startups, to other entrepreneurs. But that is a business model that other people are trying to replicate. So good or bad, that's kind of what we're seeing here. And both of these segments are kind of consolidating. I've talked about it before, consolidation to quality, but we're actually just kind of seeing consolidations to bigger companies. So smaller companies getting acquired, we're going to see a lot more of that as time goes on, especially, I believe, in the third-party delivery service and the ride shares industries. Okay, that's the first one. I guess I could talk about briefly, what does that mean for you as a restaurant or for you as a distributor or an operator? Just looking at this through the lens of a restaurant, a lot of people are asking the question, what does this mean for me? Are my those commission fees or are any of my service fees that I'm paying that are anywhere between 15 and 40%, are those going to be reduced? If these companies are growing, they're acquiring other companies, there's only two or three guys that are battling for my business, they're going to have to get more competitive, right? Maybe, potentially, they could. What we've seen throughout this whole lockdown and throughout the COVID, the pandemic, is that some cities put a cap. They put a cap on the delivery fees, and some delivery services actually lowered their commission fees. But at the end of the day, they're still unprofitable. So we have to think with, call it 30%. They're charging 30%. That's the service fee, or that's the commission fee for this service that they're providing, and they're still not profitable. So what incentive would they have to lower those fees? So it could, it might. Again, I have not talked directly to these companies. I don't know what their long-term plan is, but those are some things to think about. Most of the chains and customers that I've talked to that have decided to get into the delivery space have actually found that it's less expensive to get the insurance and use your own employees, even hire a couple of kids to drive the food around. That way you're protecting the brand and the experience from when the food is put into a to-go container to when it actually arrives at the customer's house. So that's something to think about. It's better for the brand, better for the message through and through, and it's just as expensive or even less expensive if you do it correctly. All right, that's the first thing. Number two, wanted to talk about something in the supply chain. Speaking of third-party carriers or just third-party logistics in general, because that's kind of the theme of today. We're talking about logistics, talking about moving stuff from A to B. That's what we do, right? I had a call today, and I'm going to leave the customer group. I'm going to leave the company that I talked to. I'm going to leave all the details out. But I had a very interesting conversation that I wanted to share with my listeners here, because you guys get the distribution inside scoop. That's what I'm here for. All right. So I received a call saying, this is from a third-party logistics company that works in the United States. They said, hey, just expect potentially over the next few weeks, some delays. So normally when we have a company pick up an order or we drop an order off at one of their hubs, they can get it from A to B in, let's call it 2 to 3 days. So the phone call I got was saying, expect maybe 4 to 5 days. And I'm like, okay, well, thanks for the heads up. Why? What's going on right now? And they told me that their employees that they furloughed a couple of months ago, they were ready to hire them back, and they rejected coming back to work because they wanted to collect unemployment. All right. And the search for mid-level to lower level, closer to minimum wage employees came up empty. They haven't been able to find people that want to get back to work. And in polling their ex-employees, what they found is that they were getting this additional $600, they were collecting unemployment, and they did not want to go back to work because they would be making less money working for a major logistics company. So That is not surprising. I've seen it and I keep hearing it. I keep hearing it from restaurants and from other distributors, seeing it a lot in this industry and all industries, really. But that is something that we are going to have to deal with at some point. So that was reason number one. That's the first reason why we should maybe see some delays with third-party logistics companies. The second reason is there are big, well, I can use this. Everyone knows Amazon. There's a company, or there's a hub of Amazon in California that is having the exact same problem. They're having a problem getting their employees back to work. They actually had to temporarily shut down one of their plants, and they hired this third-party logistics company to just drop some trailers, and it's full of Amazon goods. It's full of products, store products, products waiting to be sold or resold. And they are unable to operate at one of these warehouses. So some of the products are on trailers that are rented out. And I'm sure Amazon paid a fair amount to rent out these trailers or to have these trailers just sitting on the road, sitting on the side of the building. And that takes more trailers off the road. So for somebody like me in the distribution industry, or somebody like you who's waiting for a third-party logistics company to drop off your order, that hurts. That hurts us by a couple of days also, because the logistics companies have less trailers. So they have less employees to be packing and driving the trailers, and then they have less trailers in general. So I thought that was a super interesting phone call. I was not expecting that. After playing it through, I've talked about the supply chain and the challenges, especially at the processing. So that second hub of the supply chain, the processing point. But I'm not surprised by it. I don't think that people are factoring this in as much as they should be with what's coming around the corner. So we should see a lot of that, a lot of the unemployment benefits, the extra $600, the some of those components that were in the CARES Act or the SBA or the PPP, that should be running out at the end of the month. There are talks of extensions, and if there are extensions, then this problem will continue going and will probably last a couple of weeks past when the additional supplemental income or the additional unemployment checks are when those funds or those reserves dry up. But it sounds like there's really no bottom to it at this point, and there's no plan to stop it. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. Just again, something to be thinking about, something to be aware of if you are on either side of one of those logistics companies. All right. So number three, the last thing that I wanted to touch on that has to do with supply chain and some hiccups in the supply chain also are gloves. Everybody needs gloves. I actually saw some things today that it's being demanded at the federal level and mostly at state levels, or at most at the state level in most states, that people are needing to be wearing gloves, wearing masks, that is workers and customers when they're inside of buildings, inside of dining rooms, whenever they're doing anything that has to do with food, food service, or food preparation. So that's great. And it does protect the spreading of germs. But if there are no gloves and if there are no masks or there's not enough, that causes major issues. So a lot of the gloves and masks and the PPE, which is the personal protection equipment, that is heavily for the hospital workers, healthcare workers, even things like schools and government function. So a lot of that stuff has been allocated from the manufacturers directly to the people that really, really need it. Okay, so a lot of the hospitality workers, restaurant workers, delivery drivers, the people who also need it to do their jobs, they come in second to the healthcare workers. And that's obvious for obvious reasons. But if we're having at the federal level, at the state level, or even at the management level at chains or the management level at corporations and companies, say that you absolutely need these, it's mandatory, or you're unable to do your job, that is going to cause more of a crunch on the supply of this product. There's just not enough to go around. I have been talking with some redistributors and some importers that their orders from overseas, from out east, have been shorted, that entire containers are not shipping. Okay, so we have most of this product still being manufactured overseas. Not a lot of it is actually making its way here. And then what makes its way here are being used at a rate that has never been used before. So somebody like in my position, a distributor, when I talk to my purchasing department and I say, where do we go? Let's go through DOT. Let's go through redistributors. Let's go through different companies to try and see if we can source more gloves. It's not working. We are being put on, and most people or most companies are being put on something that's being referred to as history-based allocations. And that means if in July of 2019, I bought 10,000 packs of gloves, I am only allowed to buy 10,000 packs of gloves this year. Obviously, the demand is a lot higher this year for things like gloves and masks. And it's not just gloves, but this is the hot item right now. So the demand is obviously much, much higher. I would say between 2 and 5 times higher with some chains or with some restaurants, with some one-offs. And the 10,000 gloves that worked well last year, that if they didn't have them, it wasn't as big of a deal. That's not cutting it. So that's something to be aware of. If you are a restaurant listening to this and you're having a hard time sourcing gloves from your distributor, they are having a very challenging time finding gloves. So it's not their purchasing department. It's not your salesperson. It's not anyone at the distributor. And I'm definitely not trying to point the blame anywhere, but I'm just saying it's a supply issue. The demand is absolutely insane, like nothing we've ever seen. And this is being mandated first at the federal level, then at the state level, for healthcare and people that are, or businesses that are outside of the hospitality industry, to have access to that PPE first. And then second, being mandated from the suppliers, from the redistributors, from the people who are actually making or transporting the gloves first, or any of this equipment first, to put their customers on history-based allocations. So that's what's going on. Again, I'm going to say this because I say it at some point during every episode, what crazy times we are living in. And all you can do as an individual who's listening to this is stay positive, look for opportunities throughout this, right? So I don't have any sort of a inspirational story that I wanted to share this time about looking for opportunities or staying adaptable, but I'm just going to end it there by just saying it point blank. There are opportunities within this. I don't mean monetary. I don't mean financial opportunities. I just mean opportunities to grow, to take care of your customers, to take care of your teammates, to make sure that the people you are working with work for you, or you are working for, know that you are in this with them. You're going to get through this so much stronger on the other side. I don't know who needed to hear that, but that's how I'm going to end this today. As always, head over to Twitter. Give me a follow on Twitter at foodservicepod. You can find my personal Twitter at DMLAYT. Send me an email, foodservicepod@protonmail.com. And again, I am temporarily not doing the YouTube video versions of these. I'm just doing the audio version. I like to rip through them in one take. I look at what I'm going to talk about, write my notes, write my bullet points, do my research, think about who I've been talking to, what I've been learning this week, what's in the news, and then I go through on my recording device and my app here and just rip through, try to do it in one take. Today was a success. All right, that's it. It's Thursday night. It's after 5 p.m. You go get yourself a frosty beverage of your choice, and I will see you next time, maybe in a couple of days. Have a fantastic evening. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.